Okay, dear dumb friends, so we are coming to the next session of this mindfulness for young adults session. So that is discussing a sutta in order to take some guidance from the Buddha's teaching. So these days we were discussing Sabbasava Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses of the canon. And it is very interesting sutta because it is talking about the influxes, or sometimes we call them as taints, which are in a way hidden, and we are very much like acting according to them, and we have certain tendencies, we have certain habits, addictions, and preconceived ideas, and all these things are actually due to these various hidden layers or lower layers residing in our mind. So Buddha talks about three types of asava, three types of taints, namely kamasava, talking about the sensual desire, and bhavasava, the desire to live, desire to continue, to become someone else, and then the avijjasava, that is called the ignorance. And sometimes we call four asava, four types of taints, including dittasava, that is the views, various wrong views. Actually, that also can be included under the ignorance, under avijja. So basically, we can talk as three taints. And here, asavakkhaya jnana is one of the very extremely important vipassana knowledge. Maybe one can achieve only when one reaches very high level of understanding. So you can see, even though only three asavas are there, kamasava, bhavasava and avijjasava, completely uprooting them is not an easy task. So therefore, uprooting or eliminating asava is one of the important aspects of the Dhamma, and therefore Buddha talks about various ways and means we can accommodate in order to remove these asava, remove these stains. Basically, he is coming up with seven types or seven strategies to remove stains, namely by seeing, by understanding various mentalities and going to the root of them, going to the beginning or to the source of them. And to not to see just the outside appearance, not to limit ourselves there, rather to see the causes, rather to see the proper source. And therefore, this wise attention, or yoniso manasikara, is predominant in this section, what we call as dasana pahatabba. So, a good practitioner know how to think in a way. So it is through thinking or wrong thinking that we get further entangled, further polluted, and again further hinged with the samsara. But if we know how properly to think, then that actually helps us to disentangle and decondition our mind so that it can become free. So therefore, this is actually a fairly deep subject. And therefore, Buddha say that if one wants to think something, and he recommends to think that there is suffering. And he recommends to understand the cause of suffering. And the cessation of suffering has to be realized. And this has to be practiced again and again. This recipe has to be practiced again and again. So ultimately, it becomes kind of a path, a way of life. So the Noble Eightfold Path. So, Four Noble Truths is something that Buddha emphasizes in this section, that if you want to analyze, if you want to introspect, if you want to look at, if you want to see what is really going on in the mind, and recognize the suffering, recognize the stress, recognize the unsatisfactoriness available in the mind, so that is a kind of a recognition, kind of an understanding. It is not that we are trying to get rid of suffering, rather, we are trying to understand it. So we have to be very brave enough to face-to-face be with the suffering, to understand it really well. And it is not that I am suffering, rather there is suffering. So there's a big, huge difference in this attitude. Typically, whenever we are going through some sort of an unsatisfactoriness, or any kind of a despair, any kind of unhappiness, so always we tempt to take that personally rather than looking at it objectively. So the First Noble Truth helps us to maintain that attitude change where we are trying to look at it objectively. It is not my suffering, it is rather there is suffering. And when we are able to do such disengaged observation or non-judgmental observation, then we are able to recognize the cause of suffering. There are very different ways of causes, and Buddha somewhat simplify it and tell there is desire, tanha, so that is the craving, that is the cause of suffering. And that also has varieties. And if we are carefully observing suffering and recognizing the causes, then typically we can recognize, okay, this mind is now become agitated because there is some sensual desire. It becomes somewhat tensed because there is a sensual desire. Or it wanted to become something else, doesn't appreciate the present moment, not happy with the current situation. Rather, it wants to become someone else, or want to have something more, or want to change the present moment, doesn't accept the present moment. So this kind of desire to become is also a kind of a driving energy. We are always being driven towards something else, leaving aside the present moment, not recognizing the present moment. So that is also a kind of a driving force we all have, and that is called bhava tanha. And again, when you are going through some unsatisfactoriness, kind of a pain, kind of a unhappiness, we always want to get rid of it, we want to annihilate it. So as a result, that also a type of desire, and that is called vibhava tanha. So understanding these kind of subtle layers of the mind, how mind reacts, and then we are very much like observing ourselves, understanding our mentality, and it is, we can say, complete psychology in a way. Now more and more we recognize ourselves, then we can unentangle the mind, we can purify the mind, we can recognize our various drawbacks, shortcomings, and we can rectify them. So it's in a way it's kind of self-learning process, and we have to be very honest and humble in that process. And so this in a way kind of we are seeing our own shortcomings, this way we are seeing our own stresses, understanding our own tensions, understanding our own defilements, how we get entangled. So this is how we are seeing. We have to see, we have to recognize. It is not that we are learning through books or hearing Dhamma sermons, but rather we have to look at our own mind at that very moment, in this present moment, what is really happening. So this is how we are seeing ourselves. So Dasana Pahatabha has that kind of a very immediacy. Immediacy is there because at this very moment we are looking at ourselves. And then we discuss the next method, and that is where the restrainment, where Buddha mentioned that we have to maintain some sort of a restraint, otherwise continuously because of our faculties, various polluting information may be coming and polluting the mind. Say for example, if we are not careful about what we see, careful about what we hear, careful about what we sense, and most importantly, careful about what we think, then we are inevitably polluting the mind, further contaminating the mind. So therefore, Buddha requests us to be careful on how we are handling our senses, how we are handling our faculties, Don't think that even though I am rich, even though I am healthy, even though I am wealthy, that I can do everything, I can take everything, I can listen everything, I can see everything. Such kind of an attitude can lead to kind of a polluted mind. So we can see nowadays there are still people have wealth, they have strength, they have all the luxuries, but they are not happy. It is not the wealth or luxuries ultimately bring us happy, happiness, but kind of a more than that is there. So that's why Buddha is taking a different approach. It is not simply gratifying the senses make us happy, but there is something more deeper. Satisfaction is possible through various other means. So when we are dealing with these senses, therefore Buddha recommends some amount of restrainment, because otherwise we can never finish the job. We are continuously trying to purify the mind while keeping the doors open through the faculties, and through that more and more contaminants coming in again and again. So in such way there is no possibility of completely purifying ourselves. And we need to recognize that already the mind has fairly polluted, fairly contaminated, fairly confused. So why not at least stop further contaminating it, further polluting it? So that is how Buddha say, Indriyesu Gutva Dwarata. Just maintain your faculties very wisely, not misusing them. And then we can discuss another method. That is where Buddha mentioned about abandoning taints by using wisely. Because we know as human beings, when we are dealing with daily activities, when we are dealing with our families, maybe occupied with various our duties, so we have to deal with many things. It is not that we can always simply be in a forest and just do meditation, and we can't do like that. So we have to deal with various activities. So while engaged with these activities, how to protect the mind? When we are using our clothes, do we know the purpose of using our clothes? So are we using them properly? When we are using clothes, are we getting to any kind of obsession? Are we driven by our desires, various styles? Or are we simply know the use of it, benefit of it, and not trying to show off ourselves? And we are wisely using our clothes. So I think I don't need to explain you this too much, because this is very obvious. There are clothes in many different, with many different styles and with many different prices, price tags. But are we really in need of them? Do we don't have enough? So these are something that we can check in. So therefore Buddha recommends that whenever we are wearing a cloth, we need to know the exact reason why we are knowing, so that we don't need to get conceited because of our clothing. We don't need to be somewhat depressed because of our clothing, because this clothing have a purpose, that is to completely cover ourselves so that we can be behave politely, and again we can save ourselves from various insects, flies, maybe weather, bad weather. And likewise there are many reasons of proper usage of clothing. So therefore Buddha say, whenever we are using these clothes, so use it them wisely. So this is one aspect. And then how about food? So we have various different meals today, and when we are having our meals, so are we using that meal wisely? So this is another aspect that Buddha said, because we know that every day we need to sustain our body, and for that we need to have some food. So when we are using the food, Buddha say, use it very wisely so that you are not getting conceited. Because when we have a good, say, nutritious food, probably we might think that only I am having such food, others are not having that, so they are poor. they are not skillful. I am the one having this kind of food. So likewise, we can even compare based on our food with another person. And we can even look down another person. But when we know the purpose of having food, then it's a different story. Because we know when we eat, once it is mixed with saliva and once we swallow it, then there is no much attraction there. Rather, it is becoming loathsome. So even though it is appear pleasant when it is outside, but once we swallow it, it become really loathsome. And again, the purpose of having food is that we know that this body depends on food. So therefore, we have to feed the body. Otherwise, it may die. So therefore, it is necessary to feed the body and necessary to provide the necessary nutritions. So that is the purpose of having food. So if we know exactly this purpose, then there is nothing to be sort of conceited about this food. And again, we should not use food for just for fun or to beautify ourselves or to show off ourselves. Rather, we are using the food wisely. So this is in a way something deep where Buddha mentions about bhojane mattanyuta, where you know the limit or the moderation of the food. You know that depending on the situation, maybe if we are ill, so there are only some proper food for that. If we are not using proper food, so that illness can become more aggravate. But if we know the proper food, and if we are moderate in food, so then we can understand, okay, we know the limit, we know what is the better, and accordingly we are having our meals, preparing our meals. And we are doing it mindfully. We are practicing mindful eating in a way. So in mindful eating, actually we are very engaged mindfulness practice. We are involved with a very interesting mindfulness practice, because mindful eating is a very interesting process. Say for example, you have various curries, vegetables, rice and whatever it is, various dishes, and suppose you are seeing it and maybe certain desire to come in the mind. You can look at it, you can watch it. Maybe even your mouth become wet, you can feel it. Maybe now you are selecting certain amount of food. You can do it mindfully. Say you are taking some rice, you are taking certain vegetables, curries, etc. So at that time you can do it silently and mindfully. And suppose now everything is available in your plate. And now suppose you are mixing them little by little. And at that time your fingers can feel different sensations. Say certain curry looks different, or certain curry feels different, and certain vegetable feels different. Maybe a little sticky, maybe a little many different texture is there. So you can recognize what are these different textures that you can feel when you are mixing the food. And once you are mixing it and you are making kind of a lump, and now suppose you are bringing it to the mouth, and as you do this little activity, it's a very ordinary activity, not something difficult. It's a very ordinary activity. And while you are doing that, how you are feeling it, how saliva come into the mouth, and how you are opening your mouth, and how you are putting this lump to the mouth, and how you start to chew it, and how it is getting mixed with saliva. So these are everything that we can actually recognize. And different tastes now you can recognize. And maybe even desire might arise if it is delicious. Now you can recognize how, say, feeling causes desire. You know, passa paccaya vedana, vedana paccaya tanha. So this is a very interesting link we as practitioners who can pay our attention. This vedana paccaya tanha, how feeling conditions craving. So we know when we are having our food, so if it is delicious, I want to have more. Next day also I want to have it. I want to ask my friends also to prepare it. So likewise, so there is a kind of a desire arising because of this happy feeling. So if we are wise enough, probably rather than simply being a victim to this desire and to react to it, we simply can recognize this desire. And not only that, we can even recognize the cause of the desire. So here, for the craving, for this desire, the cause is the feeling, the happy feeling. So this is another interesting activity, what we call as mindful eating, which we can use even to understand this idappacheta. Very interesting principle in Buddha's teaching, this causes that, or simply the cause and effect relationship. So if we know this theory in a way, this rule, this principle, this very important principle, we can apply to many other areas as well. And therefore, having mindful diet is very interesting meditation. And when we are using like that, actually the eating can become a very interesting meditation technique, mindfulness technique. And it has a very deep meaning, as well as it has there is a possibility of generating certain insights. Because sometimes if we are mindfully eating, if others are also doing that, so we can be very quiet. So with a very quiet mind, we can eat. And every single moment, every single activity, we can observe. So at that time, a lot of insights might arise depending on how we approach it. So suppose that our mind is very quiet, we are very silently, mindfully mixing, and we are now eating, we are feeling, various tastes are there, and if we are very skillful enough, then we can see how each and every these activities are starting and ending, beginning and ending. And even each activity has their sub-activities, how each one coming and going, starting and ending. And even various tastes, feelings, how they are also transient, coming and going. So likewise, if we are skillful enough, we can use even this eating as a mindfulness technique, as a meditation technique, so that we can further improve mindfulness and wisdom. And then Buddha says, when we are using our dwelling places, we as human beings, we need a dwelling place in order to protect from the heat, from the sun, maybe from the rain, from various other animals, insects. So we need a safe place. So that is our home. So when we are using that, are we using it mindfully? Or are we comparing our luxurious house with another person and become conceited and looking down another person? Or on the other hand, comparing with another person, if I am having some moderate dwelling place, am I being little depressed, being worried about not having it? So likewise, even with these dwelling places, we can compare ourselves with another person, and that way also it is prone to various defilements. But Buddha says, understand the cause, understand the purpose of usage of these homes and whatever the dwelling places. So therefore Buddha recommends, suppose especially for monks, whenever they are going inside their kuti, inside their dwelling place, to reflect that I am using this kuti, this dwelling place, for the meditation, just to live silently, to continue my practice, and to protect from various other external facts like sun, serpents, mosquitoes, flies, heat, cold. And that is why I am using this dwelling place. And we can even take it to another angle, that you know, when we are entering our dwelling place, that dwelling place doesn't know that we are entering it. It is that we perceive, telling that, okay, I am going inside my house, inside my room. So that is how we interpret it. But the dwelling place, home, house, doesn't know that I am entering there. And again, it doesn't know that I am having kind of a possessiveness in my mind. It is irrelevant to the dwelling place. But we as human beings, because of our foolishness, we are having all sorts of various ideas in our mind. So this belongs to me, this is my house, this is my room, I can't share it with another person, I only want to have it, and this is my land. So likewise, we can even quarrel with another person, we can even kill another person because of the dwelling place. But if we know that this dwelling place doesn't know that there's a body inside, there's a man inside, there's a woman inside, this dwelling place doesn't know. Because dwelling place is merely four elements, this body is also merely four elements. This is just kind of an exchange of four elements. When we are entering, it's a kind of entering further four elements towards the existing four elements. When we are leaving the house, it's a kind of a leaving of some amount of four elements from the existed four elements. That's all. But we interpret as, this is my house, I am entering in the house, I am living here, this is my house, and I can't share with another person, I can't give it to another person. Likewise, so many different ways, views are there. And with that, we can become conceited. We can become really ignorant. So that's why when we are using these dwelling places, when we are using these, say, robes or clothes or even food, there's a potential, there's a possibility that there are various defilements can arise in the mind. As I mentioned, suppose you are having a very good house, very luxurious house when compared to the other people. So it's a very nice, interesting, luxurious house, expensive one. So you can compare yourself depending on this luxurious house and can look down another person. So that there's a possibility of mananusaya to develop, or the avijjasava to develop, ignorance to develop, thinking that this belongs to me, I am the owner, I am the proprietor. So likewise, I am making a self out of this usage. And even when I am wearing some beautiful clothing, I can show off, I can be the center of focus. There also I am making a self. I am an individual. I am the best, prettiest, handsome person. So likewise, I can make a person when we are using these things. And similarly, Buddha mentioned about the medicine. So when we are using various medicines, again, if we are not using them wisely, so we can become either conceited, or we can become sort of obsessed with those things. So likewise, when as human beings, nowadays we have to use many different things, various components, tools, occupations, and so many things. And if we are wise, if we are skillful, then we have to be very careful in using them. As human beings, we can't stop using them, but when we are using them, we have to be careful not to arouse new defilements, not to strengthen new defilements, not to strengthen existing defilements, not to strengthen existing traits, our habits. Rather, to use them wisely, understanding the purpose of it. Understanding, if it is physical, understanding them as, say, elements. So this way we are covering ourselves, protecting ourselves, not allowing to pollute our mind because of this kind of a usage. Protecting the mind, saving the mind, not to polluting it. So this is another aspect, interesting aspect that Buddha is pointing out here. So we as human beings, we are using many things. Suppose you are using a car. So while you are driving a car, are you being conceited? Or are you simply using it for the purpose? Since you are unable to walk from this end to the, from this place to the other place, suppose you are using a vehicle. But are we using in that way, or are we using to show off our, say, status? So these are something that we can look into, that as human beings, we are using so many things. So while we are using those, So we have to be very wise so that new defilements are not being generated. Our mind not getting entangled. Our mind is able to maintain the already available peacefulness, already available spaciousness, already available humbleness, honesty. So those are certain interesting qualities that we all have, but don't pollute it, don't lose it because of these many external usages. So this is what Buddha is pointing out here, and I would like to conclude short Dhamma sermon with that. And now I like to open the session for question and answers.
Abhisai Bhante, Happy New Year.
Yeah, wish you the same.
We currently have three questions.
Yeah.
Question number one. General question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I did the retreat at being isolated and not talking with anyone. After the retreat, I met some of my relatives. They asked questions, and after talking for about 1 to 2 hours, I started getting a head pain in the left side of my brain. I know Bhante always says, how soon you can come back to the presence of breath determines the resilience. And yes, I want to strengthen my resilience with this instead of blaming. Another thing I noticed was mind plays what happened on and on, just like an echo in a bell, even after the relatives have left the place. Whatever the residual mind has picked up plays again and again, even after the conversation, as if it is trying to relive that 1 hour and trying to enforce an identity of myself by giving this back and back to the mind like food. I thought to share this with you, Bhante, and much merits. That's the end.
Yeah, if our Lokusavinnase was here, he interestingly mentioned that don't associate relatives. So anyway, I mean, sometimes we can't stop it, avoid them. But actually we can be friendly with them, we can be kind to them. But of course we have to bear these kind of situations because we also get sometimes involved, we also get into jokes and sort of serious discussions, politics and so many things. And we lose our contentment. We lose our peacefulness in the mind. But anyway, don't worry. This practice actually helps us to bear it. It is not that always we getting sort of collapse after this kind of a conversation. Rather, we become, as you actually have mentioned, that we become more and more resilient with the practice. We can quickly recover. But at the beginning, it is so fragile, so we are not in such a developed level. So even a little thing make us really disturbed, make us really unhappy and disturbed, because still our mindfulness is not strong enough. But with time, actually these even activities help us to further correct ourselves, trying to recover ourselves. So we understand, okay, still my mindfulness is really fragile and I am not in a position to maintain it continuously, maintain my peace continuously. Still, I am subjected to various ups and downs. Still, my mindfulness is not stable. So this is kind of an understanding in a way. It is not that always positive understandings are there, but even the shortcomings, understanding our shortcomings is an understanding. It's a kind of an eye-opening situation. So we need to thank those relatives to show us that I am still, this. My mindfulness is still very fragile, very weak. So even with 2 hours conversation can make me feel really bad, collapsed, and also in the kind of a, exhausted kind of a situation. But as we improve, even such conversation doesn't matter. Even such conversation can't destroy the existing mindfulness or existing peacefulness in the mind. So such a stability is there in the mind. So that may grow as we are continuing our practice, and it may take long time. So we can't immediately have such a stability in the mind. So it's a matter of continuing our practice. And that is where the perseverance is important. that Buddha mentioned, that atapi, that we need to continue our practice irrespective of all these various obstacles coming in our way. Rather, we continue our practice. More and more we are succeeding in the practice, then we become more stable. So that's why even when someone is blaming, now this is maybe a typical conversation you all had, but assume that someone is coming and blaming you. Even on such situation, if we are able to maintain our sort of an undisturbed mind, steady mind, unshaken mind, so that is something that we need to look after, or we need to look forward. So that is actually indicating some depth in your spirituality, some depth in your practice. So how unshaken your mind is even under the say vicissitudes of your daily activities on the in your life. So that actually indicates the spiritual maturity in oneself. So let's continue our practice. So slowly we would be able to gain such a skill. And of course, it may not happen immediately. So it's a matter of continuing the practice. Yeah, we can move forward.
Question number 2 of 4. This is day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, I try to practice mindfulness during day-to-day activities, starting with easy actions such as brushing teeth. I have tried many times, and it is now months, and I cannot keep this mindfulness for more than a few minutes. The first minute seems to be okay, and then the mind distracts to some other thought. I realize that I was not mindful only after I finished the activity. Is this due to a lack of concentration or samadhi not built enough? During the sitting and walking, I can be mindful even 1 hour. I feel relaxed and like a cucumber. Also, during the retreat time, the day-to-day activities were not challenging, and I recall being mindful throughout the day. For Bhante's information, my work life is very stressful and busy. Also, these days, I seem to get attracted to too many things which I am not even part of. For example, the vaccine rollout, what to do with Donald Trump, etc. Thank you for your valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah. So, probably Donald Trump may have to leave, I feel. So you don't need to worry about too much. So actually this indicates how our mind is. So we even if we don't have our own trouble, so our mind seeks for a trouble. We want something to be worried. So it is interesting. I mean as human beings we want to be worried. So this is how our minds are really stupidly working out. That we are, in search of troubles. That's why, we are watching so many news and troublesome sort of activities, excitement, what has happened in the other countries. So if you simply want to see the breath, so it's very boring. Because there are no activities, there are no excitement there. And so this in a way, kind of the habit of the mind, addiction in this mind. So that is what we slowly have to recognize. So how much I am attracted towards these kind of news, attracted towards various excitements, maybe sports or whatever it is. So if we can recognize that habit in our mind, so that is an understanding. So we actually ourselves have to correct ourselves. There is no another person don't know the exact drawbacks we have. Actually, if we are honest enough, then we honestly can understand how I am polluting my mind, how I am further sort of stressing my mind. Is it really necessary? Is it really necessary to look this much of internet, browse the internet? Is it really necessary to watch movies as this much or see the news as this much? So this is something that we can honestly check. And if we understand it is too much, or it is really sort of losing my concentration, losing my mindfulness, losing my calmness, peacefulness in the mind, so that is where we need to restrain ourselves. As we discuss in the Samvara Pahatabba in Sabbasava Sutta, so that's why Buddha recommends, so protect these faculties. So it is a kind of a protective action that we need to do, like looking after your child. Because the child doesn't know how to behave, say for example. So he might even fallen into an accident. But you as the parent has to guard your child. You have to protect your child, look after your child. Similarly, we have to look after our mind. We have to guard our mind. So if this, because of these faculties, if we are constantly polluting it, then of course that indicates that I am not looking after it well. So once we understand these shortcomings, so then we can take some corrective measure so that we can maintain further, say, pure mind or fairly a stable mind, peaceful mind for another period so that we can maintain it. So this is something that interesting, that something that we can work upon so that we are able to maintain peacefulness in the mind. Yeah, we can move forward.
Question number 3 of 5. This one is sitting mindfulness. Bandami Bhante, I am continuing the practice from the Canberra retreat. In that, you advised me it was okay to start looking at the thoughts now. This is what I have discovered. In the practice, initially, because I would start the practice after a day's work or general household chores, my mind immediately latches onto thoughts. However, as the mind and body calms down, the focus shifts to feelings in the body and then to the breath. The breath is always felt as just a pulse on the nostril, no other major feeling. Then the focus shifts back to thoughts, and after a while back to feelings, then breath, and back again to thoughts, in this order, cycling. Please advise if I should focus on one or more things here or nothing at all. Much merits for your guidance with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, I think you can allow it to happen. So it is like slowly your mind is associating either thoughts, either feelings or various sensations. So this is something, if we are trying to forcefully keep only on the thoughts at this level, it might make little bit of tension, little bit of stress. So rather, because anyway you are dealing in the satipatthana, because when you are dealing with feelings, you are in the Vedananupassana. When you are dealing with thoughts, you are in the Chittanupassana. And when you are dealing with various characteristics, element characteristics, sensations, you are in the Kayanupassana. So that indicates that you are really safe. You are in the sort of the resort of the Buddha. So therefore there is no harm in switching. So there is nothing to worry. Just continue your practice. Slowly you may give more prominence to watching the mind. So it may happen naturally. So let it happen naturally. That is more healthy, rather than you are trying to manipulate meditation, trying to manipulate your practice. Allow it to naturally switch. Doesn't matter. Once it is switched to feelings, so you are learning from them. Once it starts to watch various thoughts, you are watching the mind, so you are learning from that. And when it is observing various sensations throughout the body, you are learning from that. Because all these things are very fruitful and all these things are rich ground for you to get have a good understanding. Because everything actually shows the same story. They are telling the same teaching, so that we can learn from all these rather than trying to reject and select only what we preferred. So slowly or naturally you might give prominence to the mind, and it will happen with time, and no need to speed it up, no need to force it, rather let it happen. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 5. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you for your mindful eating explanation. This is exactly the question I had. Much merits. Could we say that just like dwelling places don't know that we come and go, could we also apply the same for our body? Because body too is of four elements, so that when we are born and die, our body will not know who has come and gone. Appreciate if you could clear this. Thank you. Much merits. That's the end.
Yeah, sure. That is very correct. So, I mean, if you apply the same theory, same principle to the body, this body also doesn't know whether it belonged to a male, it belonged to a female, it belonged to so and so, and now this person is a mother, this person is a father, this is, he's say, staying in Melbourne, staying in Sri Lanka. So this body doesn't know. So this body is simply for four elements, and we as human beings, because of our stupidity, we are putting so many labels, so many tags, and we are even giving various names and values. Say someone living in a small village, okay, say I'm just a villager, so like that he is looking down him. Suppose someone living in a city, so he may think, okay, I'm in the city, I'm a city man, I'm a town man. So like that he sort of exaggerate himself. So actually we are, as Buddha very beautifully mentions there, so we don't know how to use these dwelling places mindfully, wisely. So that is why we are generating so much of complications, so much of defilements, because of not knowing how to use them. So as you have very beautifully mentioned, even this body, if we know how properly to use it, then there is no possibility of generating defilements using that. So that is the, in a way, the real purpose of Kayanupassana. So Buddha asks us to look at the body in many different angles. Say, for example, in mindful breathing. So now we are using the body to refine our mindfulness, improve our concentration. And if we are able to look at various postures, so then we know that our body is changing from one posture to the other posture. It is nothing but postures. There is no man here. There is no a woman here. It is just merely a series of postures continuously changing. And when we are looking at it as many different body components, body parts, then we are looking at it in a different angle, that it is not a single unit, it's not a single thing, but rather is a kind of a combination, agglomeration of so many, bodily parts. So we are having a different, enlightening view, wise view, rather than thinking that this is something which belongs to me, this is my body, I am taller than him, I am shorter than him, I am prettier than him, so like that. So rather than having a personality view there, so rather we are looking at this body objectively. And again, if we understand how this may get deteriorated, how it get decayed after the death, so there is nothing to get conceited when we are using it. So that is why Buddha asks us to compare. So with the dead body and this living body, how this dead body has gone through various stages, this living body also will subject to the same fate, same destiny. It is inevitable. So likewise, when we are watching the body in that kind of an angle, then we are using the body to further improve mindfulness, further improve wisdom, using the same body, rather than using the body to accumulate defilements. Now we are using the body to improve mindfulness, to improve wisdom. So that is where Buddha mentioned that he says, even the whole Nibbana, the whole realization, he can sort of impose onto this body, into this fathom long body. Buddha says, I am putting, there is suffering, there is cause of suffering, there is release of suffering, and the path to release of the suffering. So therefore we can use this body very wisely, and if we are wise enough, we can use it and we can get the maximum advantage of it. And we as human beings, we have that capacity, we have that potential, and that is what Buddha actually encouraging us to catalyze. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 6. This one is sitting mindfulness. There's two parts, but I'll do the first part. Venerable Bhante, when I find the breath on my nose and watch a bit, it naturally gets subtle to the point it's difficult to notice. I watched my belly instead. Then since, so I think that what they mean is I watch my belly instead. And if I keep looking at it, I find myself imagining the breath. Where am I going wrong? That's the end of the question. Did that make sense?
No, I also didn't understand it really well.
Yeah, sorry. I'll read it out again. I think I know what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Venerable Bhante, when I find the breath on my nose and watch it for a bit, it naturally gets subtle to the point it's difficult to notice. Then instead, they look at their belly and they find themselves imagining the breath. Where am I going wrong? That's the question.
As far as I can understand, what happens is that you are watching the breath and it becomes subtle and you can't notice it. As a result, you are switching the object and now you are trying to recognize the rising and falling of your tummy, your belly. So rather than doing that, so why not you are stick to the breath? Because you need to stay with the breath for some time. So even though it has become very refined, subtle, don't leave it. So see whether you can be with it even with this subtle breath, because actually, as you can recognize, being with the subtle object is difficult. Either you feel drowsy, you feel sleepy, or your mind get distracted because nothing to hold strongly. As a result, you get distracted. Now the challenge is to be with this subtle breath, very mindful, sharpening your mindfulness, fully awake with very subtle object. So this is the challenge you have. This is the next exercise you have. So without doing that, if you are trying to switch yourself to a more gross object, so then you are not taking this subtle exercise or this advanced exercise. Rather, you are always trying to be in the grade 4 rather than you are promoting to grade 5. So the breathing kamatana, breathing object, is giving you various challenges. So rather than you are taking the challenge, you like to stay in the previous grade. So don't do that. So rather stay with the breath and see, even when it is subtle, almost disappeared, try to be there and see how long you can be there. So then we can decide either to switch to another object or to continue with the breathing. That we can decide. So prematurely, if you are trying to switch to another object, then it is wrong. Yeah.
This is the second part of that question, sort of a general question. After listening today, I wonder if I'm conceited indirectly as I try to make my achievements, try to make sure my achievements are adequate. Mindful of this conceit, as I'm measuring myself and sometimes comparing to others, who I think I should be at least as good as, or simply aversion at myself for placing a high standard for achievement at myself based on my past achievements. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, this comparison we always do, it is not easy to stop. So, in a way, we should not think it is harmful at the beginning in a way. So we need this kind of a comparison. That is what motivating us. So that is actually available in the spiritual path as well. So in one time, Venerable Ananda very beautifully mentions that one is leading a spiritual life even because of conceit. One can even lead spiritual life even because of craving. But the beauty is that even when he starts with conceit, ultimately he ends up with complete eradication of conceit. Similarly, even if one starts with craving, ultimately he concludes completely removing craving. So that kind of a beauty is there in the practice. So at the beginning, therefore, having kind of a desire, having kind of a motivation is necessary. Otherwise, you won't get that energy. You won't get that momentum. So comparing with others, that we even get into the meditation, thinking that, okay, another person is doing well, he is really mindful, he is trying his best, now he is not getting angry, and he's looking really peaceful. So why not me? Why can't I do it? So there's such a comparison always there. So that actually drives us, that actually motivates us also for the practice. No harm. But slowly, as we continue our practice, so we are recognizing this comparison, this conceit, as a kind of a shortcoming in ourselves. So that actually is a kind of an advanced practice, we can say. We have now reached a fair amount of observation. We are able to maintain a fairly pure mind, undefiled mind, spacious mind, unattached mind. On such level, why again this mind go and entangle? Why again kind of an uncertainty arising in the mind? Why again kind of an unsatisfactoriness arise in the mind? So the cause could be this comparison. On such level, we can stop comparison. We can understand the sort of the consequences of this comparison, unnecessary comparison in a way. So on that level, we can say, okay, we are now trying to avoid such comparison. So it's in a way, it's a very interesting and very tricky as well as very subtle mindfulness practice where we are recognizing existing mana, existing conceit, and we are now trying to eliminate it so that we can maintain that peacefulness in the mind, the clarity of the mind, purity of the mind, even without doing any comparison. So that is why Buddha mentioned ahankara mamankara mana anusaya. So we are knowing how eye making happens, how mind making happens, and how even these subtle conceit arise. So this is a very close observation that we need to do to our own mind. Then only we can reveal this kind of a subtle comparison is there. So this subtle comparison is the cause for this unsatisfaction. This subtle comparison is there, that is the cause for this uncertainty, this kind of a sort of a suffering, agitation. So once we recognize that, we can stop that comparison. So that way we can slowly uproot conceit. Yeah.
Question number 6. This one is a theory question. Dear Venerable Bhante, you mentioned Passa Chaya Vedana. Can you please elaborate more on this one with metta?
Yeah, I mean, to give you a very simple answer, now Buddha is giving a simile. So he says that in the old days, there are two sticks, dry sticks, are being used to generate fire. You know, if you are rubbing two sticks, one to the other, so it generates some kind of a friction. So because of this friction, some heat is generated. Now it become sort of heated. Now there's a kindling can happen. It can kindle. But assume that you keep them separate, make them apart, then that generated heat get dissipated. So similarly, Buddha says, so this contact causes feeling. When the two sticks are together and rubbing together, contact together, it generates heat. Similarly, when contacts happen, it generates feeling. When it comes to our animate things, when it comes to the beings, when there is kind of a contact, then the feeling is the result. So therefore Buddha says Passapaccaya Vedana, and it is not that difficult to recognize. Suppose you are doing some walking meditation and your leg is on the top on the air, and now suppose it is touching the ground. And at that time, what you are feeling is maybe a kind of a neutral feeling. So that neutral feeling was not available till you touch the ground. So once your foot touching the ground, then only the neutral feeling occurs. So therefore, we can say Passapaccaya Vedana can be easily recognized even in this very gross level. And even if you are able to very closely observe how various feelings are generating, probably you can recognize some sort of a friction, some sort of a contact happens internally. So that is what I can tell you right now.
Bhante, is it okay if we go over time today?
Yeah, how many new questions are there?
There are We're finished, but I have a question.
Okay. Fine.
I read it down. Did Maitrekala always teach direct vipassana method, or you could say nirvali satipatthana method? Reason I ask was that I met a monk who was ordained in Maitrekala in the, I think, the late 90s, but is now part of Thai forest tradition or Ajahn Chah lineage. And when I gave what was a fairly standard report, he was quite surprised at what was happening. Do you have any...
Quite surprised what was happening, in the sense, what was the surprise? Your mic muted.
It was just a report, and then basically what was happening, disappearance of the primary object.
No, I didn't understand the question, Chatu.
So in my report, basically what was happening was disappearance of the primary object.
Yes.
While walking.
Yeah.
So he was quite surprised at that, and he asked lots of questions.
Uh-huh.
But I thought this was quite normal, as it come from Maitrekala. But maybe that sort of method was not taught, and I don't know.
No, basically, I mean, he seems, I don't know, I mean, who we are talking about. So this is not something unique to Maitrekala. This is something common to Buddha's teaching. Now, if you see the proper vipassana, that's a kind of a gradual process happens within the inside the mind. It is not something unique to us, but it is common. It's a common technique that we all are following. Even if you consider satipatthana practice, even if you consider, say, just to give you another example, in the Chetana Karaniya Sutta, it's in the Anguttara Nikaya. So very beautifully Buddha mentions as a cause and effect relationship how mind being developed stage by stage. Say, suppose you are maintaining good sila, so that generates kind of a happiness that you are a good person. So that gives a kind of a positive atmosphere in your mind. And now suppose you are developing samadhi, your mind getting concentrated, you are being collected. So that collected mind, concentrated mind, you are using to recognize various bodily processes, various bodily activities, various bodily phenomena, and even various feelings, various even mental processes, mental states. So that is the observation task, we can say. Sammasana jnana, if you want to give a technical term. So more we do that, so the insights are arising, our mind become matured, about how these things are impermanent, how unsatisfactory these are, and how non-governable these are, so that we are recognizing anicca dukkha anatta, the impermanence, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and the non-self. So more one is improving in this understanding, so the inevitable outcome is to let go of this whole thing. So the mind becomes completely released, not attaching to anything, not holding to anything, because if one grasps, so then he feels sort of burdened, he feels unsatisfied, he feels sort of unhappy, he feels burdened, he feels gross. So more than that, so this practice actually helps him to detach from the process. So that is why Buddha says, so the practice generates the understanding, what we call as seeing things as they truly are. So when one sees as things truly are, the inevitable result is the dispassion. Yatha bhuta jnana dassanam nibbidatthaya. So when one sees see things as they truly are, the outcome is the dispassion. Outcome is the disenchantment. So when we continue that, so the result is the release. So disenchantment, nibbida, viraga leads to the release, vimutti. So the release is there. So the release has to be further culminated, further improved, cultivated. So it is not yet completely accessible to ourselves because of the power of defilements, we again and again go and grasp, again and again go and hold. So therefore we need a path to continue our practice, to enhance this freedom, to maintain this freedom, and to recognize various defilements, those are the actually the hindering factor, obstacle to which is not helping or not allowing us to maintain such a freedom in the mind. So that is, that becomes the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path, Sila Samadhi Panya. So this is not unique to Mithirigala, and this is actually the Buddha's teaching available in Satipatthana practice and available in many, many different suttas. So I can't understand why he says it is wrong.
No, he didn't say it was wrong. He asked lots of questions. So I thought if I give it this sort of report to you, it would just be a normal report. But it was a very interesting one for him.
Right.
Lots of questions.
Right.
Can I ask the second question?
Sure, sure.
His follow-up. And maybe explains why he was so surprised. Does a person who uses samatha or concentration as his or her vehicle, when they turn to vipassana or insight, do they go through the same process, or you could say same objects and experiences as someone who does direct vipassana, or is their path different, path and insight different?
We can say, there are subtle differences, because in the samatha practice, one actually holds the object at the beginning. Say, for example, if he get absorbed to samatha jhana, so that is where even for a subtle experience, your mind being absorbed, your mind closely associate with that experience. So that is why we call absorptions. But when he turns to vipassana, now that same results or same feelings, same perceptions, he has to looking at objectively, how they come and go, how they arise and pass away. And now, once it is happened, once he understand even this very absorption, even these outcomes of this absorption are impermanent, are unsatisfactory, are beyond my control, so the inevitable outcome is the release. Outcome is the dispassion. No point of holding it, no point of grasping it, and the outcome is simply the release. So ultimately, irrespective of the path, the mind has to come to that release. Mind has to come to that non-grasping nature, unconditioned nature, non-grasping nature. So irrespective of your beginning, so one may start with samatha and then move towards vipassana. One may even develop it to the absorptions level and can come to the vipassana, doesn't matter. Or one may slightly, only to the necessary amount, one can develop concentration and move towards vipassana. But anyway, ultimately, he has to get on to a situation where his mind is not grasping anything, not holding anything, and he feels spacious, he feels still, his mind is undefiled, non-grasping. So that becomes a kind of a common outcome irrespective of your beginning, so we can say. So if we consider samatha and vipassana, in the samatha approach, we have kind of absorption to the object, holding to the object, attaching to the object. But in the vipassana, it's a kind of complete release from the object, non-attaching to the object, non-grasping to the object, and so the mind becomes free. So these kind of differences are there.
Thank you, Bhante. I think that was... I actually have another question. Do we have time, Bhante?
Okay.
Sorry, one second. Give me one second. Venerable Bhante, I'm amazed at the diversity of good and bad mental states. I have been having for at least 12 years... I've been practicing for about 12 years of mindfulness, to the other extreme of very delusional and fearful. I have been having for the last 12 years from being very mindful to the other extreme of very delusional and fearful. Is it right in my understanding that I should not try to understand how well I'm doing in my mental development, but focus on my intention to carry on with my mindfulness practice? That's the end.
It is necessary to, that is what Buddha says, necessary to support ourselves in different ways. We need to have good morality, sila. We need to have some understanding about the Buddha's teaching, the Sutta Anugahita, the support coming through the Buddha's teaching, and so that we can really recognize where we are. And again, we can have a good conversation with someone so that we can sort of eliminate whatever the doubts we have. And again, we need to concentrate the mind, collect the mind so that the necessary amount of one-pointedness is available in the mind. And again, we need to develop wisdom, vipassana. So these five supports Buddha recommend. So therefore, we can't say that we should never do any kind of comparison. So comparison has to be done according to the Buddha's teaching, not to our own standards. Rather, our understanding should be verifiable, comparable to the Buddha's teaching. So that way we can be sure that we are in the correct path. So, but anyway, in this report, he is mentioning that kind of illusions and whatever the things are there, that is what it's not clear.
Do you want me to read that out again?
That part you can say, yes.
Yeah. I'll do it from the start. Venerable Bhante, I'm amazed at the diversity of good and bad mental states I have been having for the last 12 years, from being very mindful, so one extreme being mindful, to the other extreme of very delusional and fearful.
Okay, now I understand. Okay, yeah. Fine. So that is true. So our mind... more we become mindful, so more and more we are trying to maintain a sort of non-deluded state of mind, not unentangled state of mind, simplified state of mind, peaceful state of mind. But still there could be deluded states, because still there are defilements are available. So unfortunately we get deluded, unfortunately we get entangled, unfortunately we get hooked up. So if we recognize that, mindful of that, then we can apply wisdom and release from such delusion, from such entanglement, and again keep the mind peacefully. So I mean, recognizing that we have such shortcomings is a kind of an understanding. Yeah.
That concludes our questions for today, Bhante.
Sure, good.
So I'd just like to conclude the session. And just before I do, I'd like to thank Bhante for giving us some extra time as well for some questions, but also for giving up in general available time to dedicate to this program. We did this most of last year, and we look forward to do it again this year. Also, the people behind the scenes, the organizers and seen and unseen people helping to make this program work. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to conclude the session for today. Theruvan Sarnai.
Theruvan Sarnai.